Kowalski. He is an independent research analyst with great expertise on matters involving national security in general, but particularly the Middle East. He was one of the contributing authors to a product out of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies entitled Controlled Chaos, talking about Israel, Iran, and Syria, in which there is some chaos for sure. It remains to be seen how long it will be controlled. He formerly served as the director of policy for the Jewish Policy Center. He is also a very frequent contributor to our program, for which we're very grateful. Matt, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Pleasure to be with you.
So a lot of things going on in one of the contributors to that controlled chaos, as you call it, Iran. I'd like to talk with you, first of all, in the wake of the sanctions that President Trump reimposed yesterday, marking the end of the Obama legacy vis-a-vis Iran, hopefully, being met, or at least accompanied by, intensifying protests on the ground in Iran at the moment, and a lot of evidence that the source of the unhappiness of those protesters is the regime itself and what it's been doing with their money. Talk a bit about what's happening in Iran and what you think is likely to come of these new sanctions the president has imposed.
Well, these are waves of protests that have been spreading throughout Iran for 7 to 8 months now. So they have been quite durable. They've cut across the different social strata. And that's important because it's a distinction between this type of protest movement and the ones they've had in the past. The recent ones were in Isfahan and Shahin, Sahar, and Najaf Abad. These are all in the Isfahan province, which typically are assumed to have been on the government side. So that's very significant. Usually these stem from economic issues, lack of water. However, they're taking to saying now death to the dictator, death to Rouhani, and a lot of other chants are bringing up the fact that Iran is spending billions of dollars with its adventurism, talking about in Syria, in Yemen, in Gaza, money that the people think should be spent for the good of the Iranian people as opposed to foreign adventurism. And this is a very important distinction. We have to remember that about 16 billion a year is the budget Iran is spending to prop up Assad. That's aside from 8.2 billion a year for the IRGC annual budget. It's significant money.
And money for Hezbollah, lest we forget their proxies there, and Hamas in Gaza. I mean, these are real dollars we're talking about for a country that is struggling on a good day. And we've seen the plummeting value of their currency. Matt, do you think that the sanctions will have the effect of propelling further the seeming growing appetite for regime change in Iran?
Yeah, I think that's the important metric. I think they will have a very determinative effect, especially since, I mean, this is going to make a horrible economy even worse. And the people know that the reason for this is because of the regime. It's not being blamed on the West. In fact, the chants against the West have pretty much become passé at this point. The people know the jig is up. They can tell that the administration or that their government is basically messing with them and spoiling their own future. So I don't think attempts to point elsewhere is going to really quell anything with the movement here.
Yeah. Well, I hope our own government will be helping them along to the extent we can. And Matt, you mentioned Iran and Syria in the same breath there. There was a potentially quite important development over the weekend as a prominent Syrian scientist was assassinated. Tell us a bit about him and what it means that he's been taken out.
This is Dr. Aziz Asbar, and he is the head scientist at the Syrian Scientific Studies and Research Center, one of the three main locations inside of Syria that works on chemical weapons. It's been tied to North Korea and Iran very specifically. He is the head of not only that department, but in charge of long-range missile procurement and development. So he has been very high on the list for Israel for a while. We believe that he was killed by Israel, though Israel is not taking responsibility. It happened through a car bomb. Israel has had first of all, they've been striking this site repeatedly over the past few years. The Revolutionary Guards are known to have a camp nearby.
Oh, so the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Correct. Yes, the IRGC is essentially camped out there. So he has been working with the research and development facility there. The car bomb fits a pattern. Israel had killed the Hezbollah mastermind of the 1984 U.S. Marine barracks bombing in Beirut. They did that in Damascus in 2008. They also, at that point, killed Mohammed Suleiman, who was the Syrian general who was in charge of a shadow army that made the nuclear program work and was in charge of chemical weapons previously. So this fits a pattern of what Israel would likely do. And it's designed to send another message to both Moscow and to Damascus that it's not going to deal with Iran entrenchment inside of Syria and that they're very serious about it. So it's a much more major development than I think the news is giving it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you spending some time walking us through it, because I think you're right, especially if this character was intimately involved in not just the Syrian ballistic missile program, but also what could go on the front end of it, notably chemical or biological weapons, perhaps nuclear if things got going again there. This is an important prophylactic, shall we say, measure, presumably by the Israelis. Let me turn to one of the other things that you've been thinking about and writing on, Matt Brodsky. You had a piece recently entitled America's Turkey Problem Finally Comes to a Head. This, I think, is in the first instance about an American pastor. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just reaffirmed the determination of the president and the Trump administration to extricate Andrew Brunson and others being held hostage by the Turks, American citizens. Tell us a little bit about what else is going on here in terms of the problem that we have with Turkey and what the administration may be intent on doing about those as well.
Well, aside from the problem with the pastor is the fact that Turkey is receiving the F-35 Lightning, which is basically the United States' top-of-the-line multi-role fighter plane and also has stealth capabilities. At the same time, instead of purchasing the Patriot missile defense, aircraft defense system, they've turned to Russia to buy the S-400, which is Russia's world-class air defense system. So they would like to have both at the same time, which under no circumstance should we allow, given Turkey's behavior. The problem is the S-400 can pick up a lot of information from the F-35, especially if they're operated by the same government. That information could, of course, then be passed on to Russia and other of America's enemies. And one of those enemies is, of course, Iran and Syria, who Iran has the S-300 so far from Russia guarding its nuclear sites. And Russia, of course, has brought in its own S-400. So it's not just a problem in theory. This gets back to what Israel is doing inside of Syria. It's not just that they killed the scientist in Syria, but they have a red line for game-changing weapons such as the S-300 and other advanced weapon systems being transferred into Syria. And in one of the three times that Israel over the past year has targeted the T-4 airbase deep inside Syria, it was transferring a Khordad, which is basically a S-300 version, an Iranian version of the S-300, and they destroyed that along with some IRGC members. So this would really change the rules of the game inside of Syria and could put the entire F-35 fleet at risk, because, of course, Israel flies the F-35 right now.
Right. So, Matt, there's a lot to talk about here with respect to Turkey, but just to stay with the F-35 for a moment, is it your recommendation that the F-35 fighter aircraft that Turkey has ordered from us not be delivered to Turkey?
there's no way that the F-35 should be delivered under any circumstance right now with Turkey currently as it is. And there should be additional penalties for the S-400 purchase. Again, that weapon, the S-400, doesn't integrate with any of NATO's air defense systems. So it's of no value to anyone in NATO and is just about harm. There are other things the U.S. could do, of course. The U.S. could get cute, still send the F-35, but deny doing updates to the cloud-based logistics information system that it has, which would basically make the fighter jet fairly useless. So there are things the U.S. can do. But to start with, it should just simply not receive the top-of-the-line U.S. jet separately, and it separately should not be allowed to get the Russian S-400 without facing severe penalties.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, Matt, if you could sort of back the lens up a little bit. This incident with the pastor, these activities with respect to these weapon systems are fitting now a pattern of increasingly brazen hostility on the part of the Turks towards the United States and their NATO allies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about a dictator who last year dispatched his security guards to beat up peaceful protesters in Washington, D.C. while he watched from his limo. He's also been supporting the Muslim Brotherhood throughout the region.
Matt Brodsky, there's so much more to talk about, but we're going to have to do it on another occasion. I appreciate you joining us today, and I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. Next up, we will speak with Dakota Wood. Straight ahead.
More with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say we are joined by Dakota Wood. He is a retired lieutenant colonel in the United States Marine Corps, in which he served with great distinction, including doing in